So I reiterate here, the bill is dead.
The story of this great city is about the years before this night.
We are free!
Hey everyone, this is Ho Ho Hong Kong special edition with me, Vivek Mobani, and my co-host,
Muhammad Magdi.
That's right, he's softer than me, so let me tune him right up. Oh yeah.
This okay. is the latest we've ever recorded a podcast.
The latest we've ever recorded, but on a different time zone. We are in a room with more people than we've ever had for the podcast.
Yeah, we're in a living room that is bigger than the two apartments you own combined.
That's very true. That and also it's acoustically balanced with carpeted floors and terrible walls. And you know what? It's all good because we're sounding pretty good on the mic and on the speakers for me.
Oh, yeah. We also have a musician for the first time.
That's right.
Right behind you. There you go. That's exactly what we need him for.
That's right.
Perfect.
Exactly. Every time something weird, we get an awkward silence, Glenn over here on the guitar, acoustic guitar, will play some random rhythm just such as this one. That's right. No budget for any sort of royalty good music.
But all right, we're here with 5 guests.
That's
tonight.
Right. Would you all please introduce yourself and tell us one thing about the place you're from?
There you go.
I am Kamran Hazid, comedian from Singapore, and the law is very strict.
Oh, something we all knew, but he thought he'd enlighten us.
My name is Jackie. I'm also from Singapore, and Lawrence Wong is going to be the new prime minister soon. He's going to take over from PM Lee Hsien Loong in Singapore. So that's a big moment for me. I don't know if you've added that to your calendar yet, Kam, but they are checking. So,
all right. So we have Kam, we have Jackie. So far, the jokes have not come just yet, but we do have Jason Leung, an ex-doctor turned funny man.
This is a very weird podcast because the name is so Hong Kong, Ho Ho Hong Kong, but the hosts are they don't sound like Hong
We're
Kong.
We're not Chinese.
No, not at all.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah.
My name is Jason Leung. I'm from Malaysia. And Malaysia is a place where the laws can be negotiated with.
Can be negotiated with.
With la.
With la. Yeah. All right. And finally, we have over here in this side
Not
of the
finally,
room.
Not finally.
This side of the room. This
yes,
side of the room.
All right.
Yes. My name is Daniel Fernandez. I'm from India.
I think people could guess that.
I didn't know we're going to bring the comics onto roast.
He was loaded from the setup. He thought of that during the setup.
Nice. He was just waiting for this moment.
I can't even say what I want.
You can't say he's racist because he's also Indian.
So we disowned him a long time ago.
Exactly. Yeah. So Jason, how a
he's
podcast
China's
works?
China's embarrassment.
So Jason, how a podcast works?
All right, Daniel, tell us. What
All right. So this.
What
is
do you
Daniel,
want to tell
Daniel
us,
Daniel Fernandez?
India.
For those of you who still haven't caught this, he's actually from India. Mm-hmm. And please.
The most interesting thing about India is that we barely have any traffic.
Ah,
nice.
That is, of course, sarcasm at its best, right? So we have that. Now we also have.
And if you want, Vivek will spell sarcasm also correctly because
exactly.
he's so Indian.
Exactly.
If it's for a spelling bee right now, Vivek would win it.
It's two strokes to the left with one stroke. That's Chinese for sarcasm. Yeah. All right. And of course, on this side in the host section. We do have
Annie Louie.
That's right. We have Annie Louie here because of Muhammad.
Yeah, well, I'm also the only local person here, and Melbourne's very multicultural, and I feel like this is the closest I've ever been.
Can I just say, I love how you never mentioned that you're female because this is so Melbourne. We're like, oh, you know, the gender is not a point. You know, I just had to be local. Yeah.
This feels like the closest I've ever come to being part of an international students club.
Yeah, we have that.
Or some dude on a guitar.
Yeah.
Like someone smoking weed.
And he's also representative of the female to male ratio in any comedy room ever.
That's true, actually. Yeah, that's very true. So we have that covered over here.
Any lineup. There you go. I wish we had a drums set back.
Yeah. I mean, for anybody listening over here, like, man, your mics are not really working well. We are limited with budgets. We have too many comedians, not enough mics.
Right.
Not a problem you normally have at a comedy club, but on this podcast, we do have this. So anyone who wants to support us, please go to our Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
When you can you hear know. Every comic with their own individual
mic.
We'll
figure that out. All right. Yeah. So we are here in Melbourne, and all the comedians here are either part of the comedy festival that happens annually, or they're here to basically watch shows, get better at there's performance and everything. The first thing I want to say...
Or stay the same,
yeah, as Mohammed is doing right now.
Yeah, exactly.
as you can clearly from see time, week after week, I'm like, this guy's consistent. He is not improving at all. So there I'm really curious that last week, Annie and Mohammed, we were on the podcast discussing about our take on the festival, being performers over here. Jason Dung over here and myself have been here since 2015. Danny Fernandez, you've been doing shows year and year and year after year.
Since 2016.
Since 2016, 1 year after us. Jackie and Calm, this is, I believe, your first time here at the Comedy Festival.
First time. We're visiting the war shows. Jason has kindly given us a pass.
Yeah.
So technically, we're here as crew members of Jason.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
And as you know, with his show, there's nothing you can help, right? There's nothing you can do. You try.
Actually, he refuses help. Everything is just done by him.
Yeah.
And then he critiques you for not helping him out.
That's so Jason. That's Jason Young.
I'm really enjoying how Vivek invited us all to be on this podcast just so he can roast us.
He prepared this material weeks ago.
He's been writing. Like, we're like, Vivek, let's go have dinner. He's like, I'm in my room. I got some stuff to do.
Yeah. He's the only one smiling right now. If only his friend was this much time writing jokes.
Yeah, if only,
for his show.
But Jackie and Cam, like, what is your take on the festival as coming from Singapore? Because when I first came from Hong Kong, my first time, I thought, you know, oh, you watch some comedy shows. And when it came in, I was like, oh my God, this is another level. Like, back at home before 2015 coming here, I was like, you know, I'm the top guy in Hong Kong, you know, this big name, all right, I'm gonna go see the world, show them how it's done where we come from. Yeah. And I came in, I was like, holy shit, we're just a bunch of kids in a playground thinking we're like NBA and going like, all right, I watched me slam dunk, and these guys are like doing that like without their eyes open. Right. What's your take so far watching shows at the festival? What has it blown your mind? Have you come here going like, oh, I could do that anytime? All right, what's your take on the whole thing?
Well, I've done spots and I've done comfortably well in spots to feel like, I feel like coming to this festival is to find out if I'm a good comedian. I think I'm a good comedian now. Like, I think I can comfortably say that because I've seen bad comedians at some of the shows that I was on.
So you watch Jason's shows. Hey, we all do that coming. Yeah, anyway,
I actually haven't.
the one show you're actually built to be here.
Yeah,
on.
I was like, I got time.
Right.
Yeah. Because I'm gonna open next week anyway. Yeah.
Right. Nice. Okay.
So you've done some spots, Jackie. It was a short spot at these showcase shows, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Racist immigrants.
All right. So let me ask you this.
You're already just like naming names.
No, that's the name of the show.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just like trashing the show. You're like, God damn.
I thought he was talking about
just
the
referring
audience.
To all of us.
Yeah, he was just referring to the audience. He's like, yeah, that's what they are, right?
Racist.
Okay, so Jackie, when you did your set, initially, did you have the shock factor of like, oh, it works back in Singapore, but here I've got to adjust this a lot? Would you say there's a lot of adjustment? Because what I found as well, a lot of comedians that you're a killer at home, be like, man, none of this is going to translate. How do I change with that? Did you face that trouble?
There were jokes that I had to negotiate and adjust, definitely. But there were still like two or three bits that are like pretty wholesale that I can do them quite comfortably here. So that was a good feeling.
All right, that's nice. Okay, now come over here. You've just been watching shows, right?
No, I've been doing spots as well.
You're doing spots as well? Same show as Jackie?
He hosted one of the shows that I was on. And but for me, I think for him, as a Chinese guy, there's way more Chinese people here.
I can't tell the difference. Right? I mean, let's be honest.
But for me, he's
just a person to me.
I definitely had to change material because like no one knows what the fuck a Malay person here is in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So I definitely lean on the Muslim part way more than the Malay part because that travels better.
He actually prays 5 times a day here. He doesn't in Singapore. What, you know what I mean? I mean,
he's getting into his set, you know?
I was at a Free Palestine rally. Bro, I was all in with the Muslim.
Are there no Malay comics here?
None.
There are no
Dude,
Malay.
You can move here this and by default be the best Malay comedian in Melbourne. Yeah. Just by.
So you're telling me right now at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, the only Malay comedian other than yourself would be Fakhar Fazz.
Yeah.
From Singapore.
And we negotiated it so that he was the first 2 weeks and I was the next 2 weeks. So that he would be the best one.
But would people know the difference if they watched you, the two of you? Would they be like, why is Fazz doing another set?
Because I'm fat. So like,
I thought you were going to say because Fazz has jokes.
Speaking of this is a true story that happened recently at my show. So Jen Han, another Malaysian Chinese comedian, he comes and flyers outside my show once the show is done. So three nights ago, I was on stage. The show is done. I'm shaking hands with fans as they come on stage. Jen Han is outside my venue. He's flying. Two white guys came up to him and said, "Hey man, can we take a photo with you?" And Jenna said, "Oh, me? Why?" "Because your show is very funny." And I thought, "Oh, but I don't I'm not performing." And he pointed to me on stage and they were like, "Oh, so sorry." They thought Kwa Jian Han was me.
Are you serious? Because you guys look very different.
Exactly. I'm 100,000% serious.
Wow. Really Holy happened. Shit.
But the irony of that was that you were still on stage at that time.
Yeah, so this is how bad it was. I'm still on stage.
Yeah.
They have left. So they have gone down a stairwell. But they see they then see Jian Han flying. And then just...
Here's the thing. They think you just finished your show and you're flying outside of your own show
for the next show.
For the next
because Jason presents a very humble comedian. Like, this is the kind of guy he would be. He just did a solo show. He'd be out here in the stairwell flying.
Yeah. I think it's just I'm just like you.
No, I think it's just because Jen Han was outside with a tacky leather jacket as well. So I think they're like confused.
So just to give everyone context, we're referring to Kwa Jian Han, a comedian from Malaysia. Dr. Jason Leung, again, please go online, check them out on Google and all that stuff. I mean, not Google, like just go online, search them on Instagram.
Okay, wait. A lot of you guys have, especially the guys who have done this festival many times, have said that there's like a lot of like weird, wacky shows. Like Vivek mentioned on the podcast before, a guy who just went up on stage and did for his whole entire set counting 1 to 200. Then you have done the festival many times. What is the weirdest show you have I've seen over the years?
From my experience over the years, I'd say it's not a Melbourne International Comedy Festival until you've seen somebody's penis on stage.
At least twice.
Yeah. That is very true.
So,
actually.
Okay, tell us one quick one, like a weird set or a strange...
Other than your own set.
Oh, fuck. Weird set.
So this would be for you and Jason and Annie. You guys can prepare stories since you have done it many times.
Well, I can tell you this one that I saw was Gary Starr that Jason introduced me to.
Gary's dick last.
Gary Starr. Yeah. So anyone who's ever seen Gary Starr, at some point his dick will come out. But it
for
is
for what?
As part of the show. Yeah.
Okay. That's even before the show starts, by the way. Sometimes.
Exactly.
Just to promote.
Just to be sure.
Does he flyer with his dick?
That's his flyer.
Yes. You take one. You just
his
keep
fly was
it
down.
Up.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. So I first met Gary Starr 2018. So he and I shared the same venue, but he was on before me.
Sure.
Right? Now, the finale of Gary Starr's show is, for some reason, I won't spoil it for the people listening, he takes his dick out.
Right.
Okay, but you must understand, when he takes his dick out, it is so funny, the crowd dies laughing.
Right.
Okay, now, we are in the same venue. So I normally come early to prepare for the show. Right.
Of course.
I'm performing, right? And I saw his dick 6 times. Because I come at the point where his dick is out.
Right.
And just to be clear, this guy was nominated for all the awards possible at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Golden Gibbo, Director's Choice, Producer's Choice.
That's Best Newcomer. Pre-Me Too. Is he still being nominated to stuff? Because I feel that would have fly.
No, yeah, so see.
Does he take it out artistically?
Very.
Okay.
Yeah, but you must understand, in this comedy festival, nudity is not uncommon. Nudity is not...
Frowned upon.
Forbidden.
Oh, right. Okay.
We have seen... Yeah, frowned upon, sorry. Yeah. There's female nudity, male nudity. And last year's show, we had Jordan Gray, a transgender woman who took her dick out.
Yeah.
Nice.
And once in a while, when Jason's jokes don't land, he takes his dick out.
Yeah.
He's back, and the show's back on track.
And when he has a good show, he becomes a dick.
He did the same insult to me 5 days ago. He's all locked in already.
Yeah, but this is for our... This is... Hey, Jason.
Wait, one sec.
Hold on a second. Hold on. Jason, do you do the same bit every night during the festival? Do you do your same show every night for the festival?
Yeah.
And the reason is because you have a different audience?
Yeah.
Hence why.
No, I agree. No, wait, no, don't high five.
Yes, he can.
I am the same audience.
Yeah. No, yeah. You know who
he
listens
has
to this?
Audience.
Not you, dude. Yeah.
Okay, bro.
So I know you will listen to this.
I'm the only reason Vivek has this space is because I asked him to live with me for free. I feel I got scammed.
Don't you wish you had somebody staying over who could cook dal instead?
Yes, I agree.
All right, you guys can solve your domestic disputes outside. Okay. Of this
no, next time
play.
It's going to be Vivella.
Annie, what was the weirdest show you have seen?
we were at the box office booth browsing all the flyers, and I saw a guy who I recognized from another year. His name's Cam Venn, and he had a Gibbo award winning show as well. I saw it at Melbourne Fringe later. The man lays an egg out of his butthole. So it's called Charles Horse Lays an Egg. So it's already written in the title, and then when it comes, you're like, holy shit, where did that come from?
Is that the whole show?
It's got a storyline. So he's okay. Like a man who goes to space and he fucks it's a got chicken a story line. In space, and he becomes like impregnated with an egg. And then at the end of the show, he lays like, the his egg. Cheeks are heaving, and then it pops out, and he's had it in him the whole time. And with so many questions, like, is it hard boiled? Is it raw? We never know.
But it was in him.
Yeah, he's naked and covered in feathers at the end. Yeah. And it gets
so his pre-show like, ritual is to shove an egg up his
yes.
ass. Wow.
Yeah. He's fucking every night.
Asshole got more stage time than.
Yeah. then come other assholes.
So you see him butt naked, literally.
Yeah, he's butt naked. Yeah, and
he his dick is out.
Yeah, yeah. The
and the egg comes out his asshole. I don't know why nobody is saying that more. Yeah. The so egg comes out his asshole. Yeah. Yeah. So
basically, his show ends with a chicken nugget.
Yeah, you're focusing on the wrong bit, like his backside, not the.
Yeah, exactly.
Bit.
Yeah. Yeah, why do we care if he has clothes or not? We have an egg coming out of his asshole, people. Whether he's wearing boxers or briefs doesn't matter.
Yeah, this festival continues to blow the mind.
All
right. Right, who has seen the Segway guy fly outside? Have you seen the show? We're in Town Hall, and he's always in front of Town Hall, and he's doing bits on the audience outside in front of the box office.
Right.
Sometimes he's like screaming, and the one part I didn't understand is that he keeps saying, I think they're two brothers, and they say they are actually the descendants of the Segway guy. Is that true?
That's in the show.
Yeah, that's but
No,
I have no idea who they are.
Right, yeah, but I think they
are... Okay, tell us about the show a little bit.
So I
you
just,
can spoil it, it's fine.
Yeah, I just went and watched the show because it was like a free time slot. I know nothing else to go and see. I'm like, sure. Oh, this thing's on. I went, it was me and like another group of six audience members, seven of us.
Right.
And these two guys still performed the fuck out of that show. It was incredible, honestly.
And they are performing on Segways.
Yes.
The entire time.
The entire time. In the fucking malt house.
Oh, it's not a real Segway though.
Yes. So that's the interesting thing, right? Segways are no longer in production.
Right.
So they
because
come
the guy who invented it, that's the real story. The guy who invented it died off a Segway.
Yes.
On the, do you know that, Jason? Do you know?
He knows, so let him answer.
No. Do you know? Like, do you guys know the real story of the guy who invented the Segway?
I didn't know that. I did try out a Segway in Prague once. I didn't know this.
Yeah,
happened. But now that you mentioned it, I see them around.
So going back to
So the founder of the Segway, he died riding a Segway off a cliff. That's how
one
he
of
died.
The best stories ever.
Yeah. So this show,
accidentally, not on purpose.
Yeah.
Whoa. Up to debate, I guess.
Yeah.
Wait, was this before or after they started production?
The show.
No, the Segway.
Oh yeah, after production. So like, it's like a Segway is like a thing now.
So they sold a bunch of these.
They
Segways,
sold a fucking ton, and now he's a millionaire.
Right. And he was riding a Segway and he just flew off a cliff.
That's like Pablo dying of a cocaine overdose.
Correct.
Yeah. Exactly.
He got
badass.
High on his own supply.
Yeah. So these two guys essentially are two kids that are obsessed with the Segway, the inventor of the Segway, and then they have sort of christened themselves as his kids. And they've written this show in his honor, and it mentions his passing, and it's a festival show. It's a wacky show. So by the end of the show, every audience member is a Segway. That's
the right. Trick. We'll figure it out if you watch the show.
But it's a full narrative. They're on. Yeah.
Are there any puns on the device Segway and segwaying jokes?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, at least there is that.
There's definitely at least one in there.
Okay.
Yeah, and also the Segways are no longer in production.
So I think after the guy died.
Yeah. So right. They come out on hoverboards. And then they put a fucking cardboard cut in front, and then they put a broomstick over it.
Oh, okay,
and
okay,
that's
okay.
Their fucking Segway. And then the show I watched halfway through, one of it broke, and then he was just fucking holding the broom and on a hoverboard. But he was still, and it was quite a crazy show. Like, it was a good show.
When they were flying, it was a lot of screaming.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
They do scream at you if your hands are not on the Segway.
Just to give everybody up here, this is what we mean by when you come over here, you open your mind and go like, this is possible. Because again, we are coming from Asia where stand-up comedy itself is a bit of a challenge where you're trying to explain to people like, oh, so we just come up and tell jokes. They're like, why would I listen to you?
Yeah.
So to tell someone that you're going to come to a place and watch people on Segways and they're going to yell at you and you're part of the game loving it.
Yeah.
They're like, why would I do that? I'm like, and this is one of the things I find that this festival makes you realize that a lot of things on paper doesn't make sense. When you see it, you're like, oh, this totally works. Mm. I mean, John Kearns with the count from 1 to 200, honestly, I cannot explain it. Just you have to be there, be like, wow, what is this? How is this working? This dynamic of going people. Basically, he started counting from 1 to 200 at like a festival club show, which means you get like 7 minutes. Mm. And he comes on stage, I'm going to count from 1 to 200. Everyone's like, what the hell? Okay, sure, start. He's doing 1, 2, 3, 4, gets them to 20 people. Like, the hell, shut up, boo. We want comedy, right? He just powers through it. By the 100 mark, the psychology of the audience goes, oh, shit, this guy's for real. Like, this guy's not letting go. And I think that's the one thing I've found with comedy is that if you keep going, eventually at some point your audience will build and like, dude, I like your style. I like this madness that you have, you know? Right? And I think that's one thing I learned from him going like, damn, dude, if you keep... Obviously, like, some comedians keep going without a punchline.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I think all of us can think of a few people who kept going.
Yeah. You should have stopped counting.
Exactly. It's kind of like the Segway guy. He should have stopped.
Exactly. When it was out of production, there was a sign to not have the show. Like, God, the guys in heaven go like, why? I jumped off a cliff to avoid shit like this, man. And you still...
What you're saying is so right. I mean, there's so much amazing alternative comedy over here. Like my favorite bit was Tom Walker's bit that he did at the Festival Club.
Oh yeah, yeah. So can you describe
teleportation?
So just to give people context, would you be able to describe it a little bit so people have an
100%
idea?
100%. I'm a good writer. Yeah.
He tell you close eyes. Basically, and then boom, funny.
Yeah. So Tom Walker, the whole premise of Tom Walker's set is teleportation, and he convinces the audience that he's just moving across the stage really fast, but he makes you close your eyes every time he presses a buzzer, and then every time you close your eyes and you open your eyes again, he's on a different part of the stage, doing a completely different pose. And for a couple of tries, you say, okay, I'll close my eyes, but then you want to see how it looks, with your eyes open. And then you keep your eyes open, and then you see him run across the stage, but you feel like such a dumbass because everyone else has their eyes closed, and then you're not having as much fun. So then you keep your eyes closed even though you know what the trick is.
Yeah.
And you enjoy the fuck out of the set.
Absolutely.
And then as his set is getting longer, the time between which he switches positions gets shorter.
Yeah.
So eventually at one point, you're just like, how the fuck did he take his clothes off that fast? And his punchline at the end is he takes his shirt off and he takes it off really fast.
Yeah.
So, it's a nice mindfuck of a bit. And the best part is he tells you how he's doing it.
Yeah. Close your eyes, open your eyes, you get
it's
it.
It's like a magician telling you the secret
and yet
behind the trick
it.
And and you're still enjoying it.
Yeah. I think that's the one thing I've learned as well in the festival. There are some shows I'm willing to watch twice and three times because it's not the actual words or thing. It's the process of watching them do it.
Yeah.
How many of you have noticed that you've transformed from that comedian of maybe like the guy who writes jokes and I hear I want some new material? Or have you found that some people come back saying, oh, I like that bit. I brought a friend. I want them to hear that bit again. Because like one person I saw, like Tom Walker, prime example, you have to watch him do that bit to enjoy it. Whereas like some comedians like, aha, I get the joke, I laughed, I want something fresh. John Kearns, again, good example. I watched his show, I loved the show, the whole story is great, the writing is so good that I can't even retell it to you.
The best part about that count to 200 bit is like, you can never, as a comic, you can never convince a non-comedian that this guy is worth watching by explaining to them that he just counted 1 to 200. Try as you might. But the moment I tell any other comedian, this guy counted from 1 to 200 on stage,
you
and
go
that's
watch.
It, we know, wow, and then we want to watch him.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the thing with the festival, I'm sure with all the comedians over here, we can appreciate it on a different level. We're not just going for the laughs. We want to be like, how did they do this? What's going on? I mean, they whip their dick out, but we're not like, oh, I want to see a penis. Like, we can see it. Yeah? But we want to see like, at what point and why does it improve the show?
It's just the audacity.
Yes.
Right.
Do that on stage, right? Yeah. Because what are the one thing a lot of guys do, male comedians, just before they get on stage, you make sure your zipper's up.
Yeah, do
that as well.
Of course.
Yeah, so make sure your fly's up. Yeah. And then this guy's like, fuck you, I'm going to show you.
The whole
as a comedian, that blows your mind on that level. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Come for you because you're new, like to the fest. I am too.
Yeah.
But for you, like coming here and seeing shows, not performing a full show. What's one thing you're seeing here that you wish you can take back to Singapore, or that you would actually take back to Singapore to kind of like show the scene, like something like, here's something I learned.
Honestly, it's more like when you see the experience acts who are on here, where it's like the commitment, like to the bit. Mm. In a sense where like even if the audience doesn't laugh,
right,
he's like, oh yeah, I fucking still know I'm funny as fuck. And then I think that's one thing that you could bring back, I guess, for me.
Mm.
It's kind of like, cause and also watching the improv shows, like the alternate comedy stuff.
Is
like
there
that.
An improv show in Singapore? An improv scene?
Yeah, so like for our scene, Jackie's a part of like improv troupe and stuff like that. And I'm strictly just stand up.
Right.
Like I don't really partake in improv that much, but watching it, I am definitely confused. And I'm like, okay, sure. But the one thing I take away from it would be like, yo, they do not give a fuck. They just commit to the whole show.
Yeah.
Even if this part's bombing, like, I mean, the next improv might be good. And then they just keep going and going and going. And I think that's one thing.
They're very comfortable with silence.
Yeah. And like, especially like being stand-ups, what we were taught early on, especially is like economy of words. Like fucking get to the next laugh as quickly as possible.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so that really opened my eyes. Like, oh, actually,
yeah, the economy is doing very well.
Enough, but like, nah, don't it?
Yeah, you can tell the economy is doing very well over here because so many words. And like in the Asian scene, the reason why a lot of Asian comedians are such good writers is because we've always been taught to get to the punchline as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Right?
Trim
the fat. Mm. Right? So you see a lot of Indian acts and you know, Singaporean acts must very like set up punchline. There's almost zero fat.
Yeah.
And then when that bombs, it hits you real hard because you're like,
what else can I give you?
any better.
Yeah.
So I face that as well during my run of shows. There are certain jokes I know. These are like 10 on 10 in most countries in the world. And sometimes they don't land it with the festival audience.
Sure.
And I'm just like, what the fuck do I do now? And then I watched a couple of other shows because my confidence went for a spin in the middle.
Mm.
And then I watched a couple of other comedians and I'm like, hey, I'm not that bad. I'm okay. It's been 2 minutes and there's been no punchline.
Yes, and they're super comfortable.
Everyone's enjoying themselves.
Yes.
No one's getting restless. No one's thinking like, what's happening?
I think a lot of us can relate to that. It's like the whole idea is like, oh, they're not laughing. Something is wrong.
Exactly.
As opposed to people who are doing festival shows when you're like, oh, he's telling a story. Everyone is comfortable. Exactly. Everyone is fine.
So what I've learned, and this is something I used to, you know, kind of believe in earlier, but I kind of forgot it along the way, is that it's okay to have some distance between punchlines as long as what you're saying in between is interesting.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the one thing I learned at the festivals. You're right. We've in Asia, because we've been taught the basic beginner 101 comedy, like it must be funny. That's the point. That's the whole idea. But what we're forgetting is that at some point the audience wants to come for an experience, and they're already, and especially with a 1 hour show, that's the difference. When you're doing a 10-minute set, be funny, man. No time for none of this bullshit. Hey, you know what? 1 hour at the 25-minute mark, you can say, you know what? I can have a little dip over here. I want to tell you a point. Like, I'll tell you this, like, even in this year, my comedy festival, I have this bit about, like, my uncle who passed away and everything. And I know one of the stories is kind of, like, not that funny. The punchline is a bit distant. In the first second show, I was like, I don't know, maybe I should cut that out, man. I'm not getting it. But I was like, wait, no. This is part of my story. There's a reason I'm telling you this, and I'm happy to keep it. And if you don't laugh, that's fine, because I want to tell you how weird my uncle is, and we did this. And for the sake of his memory, I did it, right? And I think that's the difference, that the audience is with you. They're already, they've come with you. They're like, you know what? You're interesting enough. I still want to know. I'm not here for the laughs only. And I think that's the festival taught us. In Asia, we get too much of this, like, but it's not funny. I'm like, yeah, but we're building into this.
So the thing is, I learned this because of improv. Like, when I first started doing stand-up, I also was lucky enough to get invited to join this improv group, The Latecomers, with Joanna Seo. We had such an amazing time. But also, that's what we learned in improv, right? Like, as a stand-up going in, we always have this conflict because the improvisers want to do an hour-long show with a narrative and they want to get... But the comedians are like, we just want to do funny, want to do short form games. And in a way, that's why the troupe is no longer as active. But there is where I learned about patience, about trusting the audience, and in improv, trusting your teammates. I think that's the thing about that.
Makes sense.
You go out, you don't care because the next thing will be funny because you know your teammate behind you is going to come back and save you. That's in improv, before every show, you go out, you tap your friend's back and say, I got your back. In every show.
That's so nice.
Wow.
That is so nice.
Yeah.
I was going to say that to Mo and we're on the same show. Like, if you die, you die. Bro.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, exactly.
Fuck it, communication. I hope you bomb, motherfucker.
Yeah. No, as a stand-up comic, if you reach behind your back, you find knives. You're just like, whoa.
That's very true, actually. I think that, like, deep down in every comedian's mind, as much as we're supportive friends and everything, on stage, like, you're kind of like, I want to be better than this guy.
Oh,
like, you're kind of be like, I need to be funny.
But that's healthy competition.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
But also, yes, so cool. a lot of our favorite moments is watching our peers die on stage because it's just funny.
So this is like a classic comedian moment where non-comics won't appreciate. Like,
yes.
For example, yeah, some gigs are more high profile than the others.
Sure.
And these are the gigs where, like, let's say we are peers. And we generally feel nervous for each other and for the show because it's a high profile show, right?
Right.
And it always happens. Let's say, I've done it to Vivek before, like, okay, this is, come on, okay, bro, let's do this together, right? So Vivek goes on stage, and usually, sometimes, if the gig is not high profile or high stakes, we're chilling in the green room.
Sure.
We're not watching the show, but if it's a high profile gig,
you want to fucking go watch
and see how the audience is, and then Vivek, okay, come on, let's go. Come on, Vivek, go. One. Punchline, two punchline, applause break. Fuck this guy, lah. Fuck him. Like, what the fuck? He's fine. Fuck him. Yeah. Like, and I say, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
The switch happens so fast.
Yeah. You captured that very beautifully. It's that's 100% accurate.
But exactly. That's so true in a way. In a high stakes show, you want the other comics to do well.
Yeah.
Because you want to ride that energy. You don't want to follow a guy who's tanked on stage at a high stakes gig. You want to fucking make sure.
Yeah, because you're fucking shit your pants behind
but
stage.
But at a regular, you know, showcase, you're like, hey, when someone dies, that pleasure.
Yeah, exactly.
that's way better than sex on that night. You know what I mean?
It's the best. It's the best.
Like, you
feeling.
Could get laid after the show and be like, I'm thinking about how good
your
that
friend,
felt.
Like, stumbling on a line that is supposed to be his big closer, and he's just fucked up the words. You're like,
exactly.
But the one thing I mean, this for the guys who are first time in the festival here, like, to expand on what Vivek said. So there are some shows where we watch in 2015. Vivek and I, where the show is about sadness. It's about this guy named Corey White.
Oh.
He did a show called The Cane Toad Effect. Oh, yeah. Right? The Cane Toad Effect. And he's talking about his mother dying from addiction, his father's an alcoholic who abused the mom. He's talking about going to foster home, getting sexually assaulted in foster home, getting addicted to ice, and then eventually he himself is on a tall building contemplating suicide.
Mm.
Very sad stuff, right? But
right.
The show is so funny.
Right.
It's funny, sad, funny, sad, fat, sad, funny, funny, sad, funny, sad, funny, sad, and it won Best Newcomer.
Yeah, that's a memoir now as well.
Yeah.
It's a book.
Yeah, a book.
And I think that show for me was the one where I was like, oh, this is like a festival show.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like, we came in, I got my set, you know, 20 minutes will be funny and everything.
Yes.
Then I saw, I'm like, wait, you can give me I experienced something. I think that was the thing that blew our minds. We're like, I've never, because back in Hong Kong, we were taught, be funny. Do a 20-minute set, be funny.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah.
Exactly.
I don't care what your context is. We're not here to, you know, feel anything. We just want you to laugh. Okay. But we were still thinking beginner-level comedy club of, like, go up there, tell you a 5-minute set, ha, 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 that thing. But a festival, that's what we learned, is, like, the festival is where you come and present more than just funny. You're presenting yourself, a vulnerability, you're opening up, you're taking us on a journey. And yes. Corey White did that for us. Whatever he is now, but I think that day made me go, like, next year when I come back, I want to be telling a story with ups and downs and everything.
Yeah.
I have a question. Do you not feel that you could pick this up from watching good specials on Netflix as well?
But I felt very distant. I'm like, yeah, but those guys are in the States. They're at a different level. Who am I? I don't, you know, I'm just this kid in Hong Kong trying to do a bit. Then I come to the festival. I'm like, I'm in the festival. They're doing a show. But we're technically in the same arena. You might be on the main stage.
It's possible.
Yeah, it's possible.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I feel
the feeling is also different when, like, you go to a show and this guy's doing such a high, like you feel so connected to that guy, and there's only 70 people in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, the intimacy of the experience is what you're saying.
But yeah, I think Vivek, you made such a good point, which is like, you don't realize you are the festival. You are the show.
Yeah.
And you can actually create something that you used to look up to. It's like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And now you're like, oh, I actually have the freedom to do it.
Yeah.
And present my art that way.
Yeah.
Like, I feel what I like about festival shows is that I see comedians here pushing the boundaries of writing way more. And not just the jokes itself, but the structure and the premises and, you know, the whole narrative building.
And even using, like, multimedia and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just, today, as the day of this recording, I just saw Lou Wall. Is that her last name?
Lou Walsh.
Yeah, yeah. Wall. Yeah. Lou Wall. great show, but also a lot of it was just like riffing off internet memes. Nothing bad about it. It was fucking hilarious. But she weaved internet memes into her story, and then in the middle, just done 10 minutes of rape jokes. And killed. Absolutely killed. Oh,
that's not, the secret. You gotta show people memes.
It's not
if
actually,
you wanna do some rape
wait,
jokes.
Wait. It's not general rape jokes. It's her own rape story.
I see.
That she weaved into the show.
Right.
Yep.
Wow.
Fantastic. See, none of you guys.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
That's the
problem. Dude, you can when she did it, when she started talking about it, you can hear a pin drop in the room.
Yeah.
It was so fucking quiet. Mm. And then she started going back in with the memes again.
What do you guys think about this? And I see a lot of comedians doing this now. And I don't know how much of it is intentional, but a lot of comedians like building up this really awkward tension in the room.
You do that a lot.
I mean,
hey!
What is that we're feeling right now?
Yeah. You do it in a good way.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I understand.
Yes.
I understand where both of you are coming from, but I think you just explained.
Yes, so we keep going.
The awkward tension is...
Yes. It's not
it's
awkward.
Different.
It's a tension.
It's a different. Yeah.
It's different from awkward tension.
No, not I'm not talking about not awkward in the sense that the comic is bad.
Right.
Awkward in the sense that the comic knows what he or she is doing, and they take you to a place where you feel almost uncomfortable, and then they pull you back, which never I haven't seen that happen too much.
But
otherwise.
That's what I mean. I feel that a lot watching you. When you're like building that tension. And you almost feel like, oh shit, this is like, they're getting a little uncomfortable. And you're like when your last
okay,
show...
Okay, so I'll tell you where... So what my response to that is, and the reason why I was a little flummoxed was because you don't see that happen very often in India.
Right.
So back home in India, it's the same, like, get to the punchline fucking quickly, right? Whereas, so with me, I sometimes, I'm very aware I have certain bits where I intentionally take you for a nice...
Yeah.
Stroll and then hit you with a punchline. But we don't do that very commonly back home. So whereas here, I see it happening a lot with other comics and it makes me also feel, okay, maybe this is something, maybe I'm onto something because my exposure largely is limited to India at this point. Right? So the reason why I come to the festivals is so I can see stuff like this and be like, okay, this is another way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to know what you guys think of that approach.
So for me, I haven't been to any shows that has made me really uncomfortable, like building tension. When I'm like, oh, what's going on? What's happening over here? Mostly because I really feel for me, I will go to a show and my mind will automatically go into like analysis mode. I'm like, okay, what's going on? Why are we having this? But that's because you're a comedian, right? You do that. I will tell you this though. John Kern's show this year, it was structured in such a beautiful way. His way of writing is so poetic that you feel like he's taking you somewhere. You're not really sure, but you're like, I have full confidence in you that we're going somewhere. Like, he talks about his son and how he's like, you know, my son's 1 year old, and imagine having this as your father. And he points at himself. I'm like, yeah, right. I mean, I want to know where you're going with this, right? You know, and maybe you go, like, I can totally imagine that. And I think that would be the closest to the like, ooh, you're right. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in that position. But no, I have not been to a show where I'm like, this is awkward. I feel very uncomfortable right now. And no one's made me that way.
Well, there are certain topics, like going back to your stuff, Danny, is like a lot of your jokes about the Israel-Palestine conflict, because your position on it is so clear, even on your social media stuff. And in your recent show, you have a chunk in the middle where that is the issue. And it that's exactly the feeling I got. I'm like, ooh, I don't know if you will manage to get them on board with this, but even the people who don't agree with you politically, you manage to see to get them to see what you are seeing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very clever.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I wish more people had seen it.
I mean,
I haven't seen it, but I agree. Yeah.
Have you seen it? You were there for the show.
What?
He's talking about
that's how
show.
Awkward it was. Yeah. His brain is just like taking it away. Never happened.
You know? You were there.
Jackie, that's how traumatic.
Were you there or not?
I don't remember. What show are we talking about,
dude? Daniel,
my show.
That is how traumatic your show is.
I wasn't there.
You were there at my show.
Oh, I think
I was there at your show. I was there at your show. How was there your show? Yes.
All right.
Yes, wow. Yes, yes, yes.
And the last one here.
Yes, wow. Yes, yes, yes.
The last one here, boys and girls.
Remember the knives that I was talking about? Yeah, I can just feel one right now.
I think so many shows.
I think what just happened is we had a Jason and Kwa Jin Han moment with Daniel Fernandez and Kanan Gill. Right over there. I did not see Kanan's show.
You saw Kanan's show as well.
Oh my God.
Wow. I did not see Kanan's show.
Dude,
I am very confident about
that. The next thing is going to be like, I never left Singapore.
I saw Aziz.
I am not Jackie.
Exactly.
None of this is real. It's not an illusion. We're just a minute ball floating in space.
Switching gears here a little bit. Annie, you're the only Melbourne local in this room. And there's a lot of foreigners who are coming into the festival every year. Tell us stuff that we would not find, like cool things to either eat or go to that we're not finding.
Wait,
like,
before we go there, I'm curious. Yeah. Annie, do you feel a threat now that you've got this new wave of Asian comedians coming into the
festival? Two questions for you then.
I really want to know because like
Asians with no...
Exactly. Like we already know where to eat.
Yeah, exactly. No, you see, please understand, Muhammad's Egyptian. He didn't really want her to be on this podcast. But he's like, I got to, let her talk a little bit, tell us about the kitchen, stuff like that. Yeah. All right, so, Annie, tell me.
Somebody clip that, please. Somebody clip that. Tell us about the kitchen.
Great question.
I just saw one. Where's your girlfriend right now? Have you banished her from the house?
No, she's eating food without me.
Oh.
Yeah. There's a reason for that. Yeah, because I'm like, this podcast has nothing to do with her. She'll come in and be like, he's not funny. I don't need that shit.
I'll be the voice here instead. Exactly. That's not funny, guys. Exactly. Not funny. I'm very threatened, and then that's why I'm going to Asia now. So I'm moving away.
That's actually true. You're really moving to Asia.
Yeah, I'm going to Hong Kong, and I'm going to stay there for the rest of the year.
But from an honest point of view, I'm really curious because, in 2015, when we first came here, honestly, I was so blown away and overwhelmed. I'm like, man, we are so far away from what level you guys are at, right? But I think that's the Asian thing of like, okay, I see where you're at. All right, let's do this, right? Okay. And we have now got something to aim for. As in, you have said that's the bar. And we just cannot understand this idea of like, we're not at the bar. Oh my God, we cannot be under the bar.
That's good. A bit of competition is good.
Yeah. However, I will be honest with you. I have, to be very straight, the Australian scene / Australian Asian scene, I feel compared to the Asian scene, hasn't had the same level of progress as in the growth, as in skill level, whatever. However, if you look at the Asian comedians, how much we've exploded and come into your scene. In other words, you coming to Asia, I feel, is not the equivalent of us coming to, let's say, Australia. Mm. So do you feel yourself as in scene like, wow, these guys have really progress grown and everything. Does that in a way make you feel pushed to do more? Or does it feel like, what the hell?
I think it makes me want to be a better stand-up because I think I'm the only person here who has blended theatre and comedy. So the 2022 show was a Moosehead Award-winning show, which means it's weird. And I had PowerPoint. I had an actor in the show. There was a bit of music. And that made it me. I'm already exposed to so many of these wacky alternative comedians every day, right? And then the next year I went, you know what? I just want to focus on being a good stand-up. And then I realized, fuck, this is really hard. This is just as hard as building a theatre cross comedy show. So this is why in the last probably 6 months I've written 25 minutes of new stand-up to do in this show, and that's pretty hard. And so trying to hone in on that craft, I think you have all inspired me to be better at stand-up.
The moment you said that, all of us stand-up comedians like, fuck, 25 minutes in a few months, that's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
No, but I have the same question for you, Vivek. Now that you've seen a lot of the writers here are doing, does that make you think, okay, I'm going to try something different when I go back home to Hong Kong?
Oh, absolutely. Honestly, just 2015, forget even now. 2015, I went back to Hong Kong with a completely different mindset. Kobe Bryant once said, while they're playing checkers, I'm playing chess. And that was exactly my mindset. I went back not saying, oh, let's play a board game. I'm like, no. I'm here to play chess now. Mm. I'm not here to play Cluedo and all that shit. I'm here to play that level. Mm. And I think that whole mindset changed where I was like, I'm not here to I'll write a few jokes. Hey, do you have new material? Okay, maybe I'll write something new. I'm like, no. Yeah. I'm now a professional full-time comedian that needs to do festival shows, that level. So I would immediately picture myself as, even if my scene, I'll be honest with you, Hong Kong scene, nowhere close to Singapore, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Especially nowhere even close to, let's say, Australia. Forget that. However, if I use that as my standard, saying, well, you know, I'm good in Hong Kong, I'm fine. Mm. Then I'm playing checkers. I want to play chess. Yeah. So my standard's always been like to Australia festivals, where I'm like, if I can't be amongst these people, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So that's the inspiration for me, really. And that's the competition. Hence why, honestly, why I do even Cantonese shows, because I want to put myself in a place where this is not even chess anymore. This is three-dimensional chess. You know, I want to play that game. So like
Chinese checkers. No.
Chinese checkers, yeah. But, you know, basically Asian, you know, Middle Asia checkers, whatever you want to call it. You know, yeah. But
go
on.
Go ahead.
And the last thing is, like, hence why, like, every year since 2015, I've given myself a different goal, different challenge of the festival, not Hong Kong, but it's forced me to say, I want to play this game that they're playing, which I feel is the one-hour solo show, do your thing, and then people come to watch you. Not, I'm here for a show, let me see some what's going on. Yeah. They're like, I came to see you.
Yeah.
And it came down to the Cantonese thing where I was like, can I make it to a point that people literally are not as here to see any show, but only this show?
Yeah.
And that was the game I did. And hence why next year, my big challenge for myself is to do English and Cantonese, and the game is same content, two languages, 1 hour each. And can I do that and have someone come to both shows and go like, oh, wow, this is
crazy. That's 2 hours of silence.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, did I say comedy show? I said meditation.
I have a question for Annie. Annie, tell the rest of us about Aussie comedy after the festival's done. What happens?
Oh,
then?
Yeah. Great question.
Give us a glimpse into that.
Yeah, it's still a really good scene to be in because you can gig every night of the week and you can do it multiple times a day even. Wednesday's a really popular night. You can probably hit up 3 gigs if you want, if you're happy to do open mic. And then you still have a lot of other festivals that come around depending on what suits your demographic. So you could have Midsummer, which is a queer festival. Then you could have like a run of shows at the Butterfly Club anytime you want. So there's venues that independently, let's say Comedy Republic, they have a replay festival. It's the best of the comedy festival, like 1 or 2 months after.
So you guys run into each other quite often then through the year?
Yeah, we know everyone who's at the same level as us.
Wow, that's so cool, because in India, we don't meet each other at all.
What?
So I'm meeting Azeem and Anirban for the first time in Melbourne this year.
Wow.
When we would not get it. I think I bumped into Azeem maybe once because we were both gigging at the same venue, but we don't get to do this because everyone's solo. So everyone's in a different city on a different day. So we don't meet each other maybe in India. We are more likely to meet each other abroad like this.
So how do you get your stage time up when you're back home? What do you do? What's the process?
So all of us are doing solo shows on the weekend. During the weekdays, if you know, we'll hit the local clubs and, you know, probably do like a showcase over there. But it's largely solo.
So a full hour.
Yeah, I'm gigging by the hours.
Wow. Okay, we can't get that kind of stage time outside of the festival.
But
really,
we don't have the same kind of fraternizing that you guys do. So for me, that which is why I really enjoy the festival, because I get to hang out with everyone here. Mm. For me, this is alien. I don't get to do this in India. It's weird.
Would you say it's because the Indian scene has developed so much that it's kind of become the UK scene? Like in UK, I noticed that people just go to their set and get out. There's not much, you know, hanging out. Australia, I see a lot of hanging out.
Here, it's a case of we don't want to share each other's markets.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I can sell a show out by myself, why would I split the bill with somebody else?
Yeah.
I'll just do a full bill and keep all the, you know.
Yeah, of course. Fair. I mean, so you don't need them.
It's a business decision, I think, primarily.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sure comics do hang out. The guys who are playing more showcases do hang out.
Yeah.
But the solo artists very rarely see each other.
Yeah, I would say I don't really hang out though. I hang out with you guys more than I hang out with the people who are permanently here.
Really?
I mean, Mo has observed this as well. Yeah, because the support is not the same, I don't think. Like throughout the year, like when I went to Hong Kong, like you guys all actually like each other and you all like go to each other's shows voluntarily.
Weirdly enough, Asia as a concept is like one scene.
Yes.
Like, as in, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but like, Malaysia, Singapore, Hong Kong, they were kind of like, we gig at each other's places.
Yeah, and also, at the end of the day, each of these countries has, like, what, 10, 15 guys working. That's it.
Yeah. I can relate to what Annie's saying, because back home also, it's not that everybody has your back.
True.
Mm. So, it's because of how competitive the market is.
Sure.
So, the difference between tier 1 to tier 2 and tier 3 is humongous. So, there's no room for friendship beyond a certain point.
Whoa.
So it's all about, okay,
yeah.
So it's like the stakes are really high.
Yeah. Now, this, I think, is the thing. Like I say, Singapore and Hong Kong, give you an example. Singapore and Hong Kong being a small dot on the map, number one.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can do, like, let's say, tours in your own country.
Yeah.
Like, city. Hong Kong's a city. It's not, right. But you get my point? We can't. I can't be like, all right, Hong Kong Island and Kowloon. It's like, what the fuck? You know, you know, you get it? Mm. So therefore, we have to come together. Like, we're doing each other. Like, even like Malaysia, really, it's not the whole Malaysia. It's really Kuala Lumpur, you know, these
places. It's just
places.
Kuala Lumpur. So, yeah.
Right.
So, I think, but yeah, so. I think
it's in JB, maybe.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I think it's not so. Maybe the supply has not reached the demand, so there's no need for infighting because we are not cannibalizing each other. We are not. There's still a lot of market. Everyone can get an audience. So there's not much. How to say? What's the word? There's not much. We are not
right.
threatened amongst ourselves.
Even
less.
All right, so as a comedian, try to talk into the mic. That really helps a lot.
Sorry.
Use the ice cream technique. Rest it against your chair.
So, Jason, what happens is, see how the mic works. Is it takes your voice?
It threw me off because normally I hold the mic in front of more people.
And we're back on the roasting, everyone. We lasted about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Five more minutes of this, Vivek, and Jason will throw his tax receipts on your face.
Yes, true. And he has a lot of tax receipts. This guy has been gigging all over the place. And let me just say, forget tax receipts, immigration forms, man. That shit would get us.
But one thing, what's nice about the Southeast Asian comedy scene is, like I said, because KL, Manila, in Jakarta, Hong Kong, Singapore, small, so we gig among each other's countries, and then we form long lasting friendships.
Yeah,
because
right.
Because of that, you know.
Yeah, I think that answers the question. And he's like, yeah, everyone is gigging each other. Like here, you guys don't really work together necessarily. You're all working for the rooms or for the promoter, right? But you and your fellow comedian not working with each other. You're just on the same lineup, and that's it, right?
Often it's kept separate, like the venue is separate to the comedians. Whereas, for instance, with Yumo, you're the venue as well as a comedian, you know? So, because it's so distinct, you want to hustle to impress the venues and get them to book you.
Yeah, so that you just made it clear to me that a big difference amongst us Southeast Asian comics is that I guess pretty much every one of us who are professional. We were at one time or are still bookers.
Exactly.
Yeah. We still book our
friends. That's a great point.
So that's why.
That's very true.
That doesn't happen among.
But also one thing, Annie, if I may say, the one thing I'm really envious of from the Aussie comedy scene is the infrastructure you guys have.
Yeah.
The physical, the rooms. The rooms that you guys get to play to. Wow.
Yeah.
Like,
the
it's just.
Are pretty high.
Yeah. You have, like, literally, like, citywide government level support, and that's a whole different game. I mean, like, when.
Yeah, I don't know how they deck it out, because the whole festival, just festival managed venues alone, every single room has proper lighting, proper sound, speaker.
Yeah.
DIs.
And,
some
and just
even
in
have
general,
wireless.
The clubs and theaters that you guys have across the country, like I've done road shows in mining towns that have had auditoriums that are way better than some of the best in the world.
Yeah. I was like, totally spoiled. Like the first gig I ever did, I was allowed to request a headset mic.
Wow.
16 years old, like, can I have a headset mic? And like, yeah, go for it. And then that just sets you on the trajectory to be a diva, right?
Now, I'll tell you this though. I think the one thing with the Southeast Asian community is, as you said, like you got into a scene that had the infrastructure.
Mm.
At 16, you were like headset mic or handle mic or whatever. You're like, all right, sure, I'll try all that stuff. For us, we had to learn. Like you would go to a scene like, I guess you got the mic? Yeah. I'm like, wait, where's the speaker? Oh, it's this little Bluetooth speaker. Like, the fuck? I can't with that. We've had rooms where you'll have like echoes where they just had
I mean, everyone in this room can tell for hours like stories of bad venues and bad
gigs, but I'm not saying bad. Everyone has a bad venue, but we had to learn what is a good venue. Like, we wouldn't even know. I think
true.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Daniel, I had a chat with Daniel, I think 2 years ago, and I believe I was complaining about how some of the bookers that this was for the London show in 2022, the company that did my show was just fucking it up in all ways possible. And I was talking to him and say, why is it so difficult in these well-developed markets, right? And he said something really cool. Daniel, I don't know, remember, you said that, see, these comics that are in the more developed markets, they grew into the industry. The industry is already there. You grow up, there's a manager, there's a agent, there's all these event companies that will hire you, whatever.
Right.
But for us, Southeast Asia, we grew and we had to be the industry. Yeah. We had to learn marketing, advertising. We had to learn producing, booking, everything. Yeah. We learn the ropes as the scene progressed.
And I think the one thing is that we weren't given like someone telling us this is how you do it. We were like literally doing it. We're like, oh, this is not the way it looks like on that show. So we'll figure it out. Like I can tell you that right now, let's say someone like Jason is like, we would know literally lighting. You would know like how many Kelvin, this and that. We would know exactly what that shit is.
It's so strange.
There is a whole episode on this podcast about a year ago setting up fucking Jason's show in Hong Kong where Vivek and I had to take a certification to operate the Genie. Genie lift. Do you know what that is? Like for the workers? We had to get certified. Some sort of a forklift to get certified to get the lights right at Jason's venue because the venue wouldn't help us. They're like, oh, the lights are up there. Do you want to go up there? Go take a certification.
So just to add to that, so this is the thing. The venue is a normal venue, whatever, right? And they had your normal, you know how they had the spinning around white spotlight with that, you know, LED kind of thing?
Yeah.
They're like, you can use that. I'm like, yeah, but that's a white light. They're like,
the
gobo. Kind of thing. I'm like, yeah, but that's a white 5,500K light. I'm like, I don't want that. I want the yellowish 3,800. Like, oh, then you have these other spotlights. I'm like, yeah, but they're pointing the other way.
Yeah.
I'm like, I need to point it this way. Like, oh, then you have to get this Genie lift forklift. I'm like, okay, can we use it? Like, no, you didn't certificate. I'm like, fuck. So like honestly,
that's the truth. That's what I'm saying. Every Asian comedian here is also a producer.
Yes.
So we will sit in rooms and while we're enjoying the show, we're like, no, the sound system needs some more gain.
All of us
need to come down to 50%.
Absolutely, man.
The lows are too low. Oh no.
And some of us who have been like, I am also a full time promoter. Yeah. So that actually helped me. This is my first run at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, and I'm very proud. Like Annie and I are doing. Working really hard on promoting the show, but I also brought in my promoter experience into doing this. So we just went into places that usually people don't go into because I'm looking at it as a promoter. How I'm also the only Middle Eastern comedian in the entire festival. Yeah. I'm like, there's a lot of Middle Eastern people here. I'm going to go find them.
Wow.
And I did. This is how the shows are sold out. Like, not just my audience. Yeah. Annie has a lot of fans here, so her fans are showing up anyway. Yeah. But I'm like, I want to bring people.
Mm.
And I'm just using my promoter instincts to find people that no one has found before.
And running reports like crazy. I've never seen anyone run that many. Like, I didn't care. He'd be like, these tickets don't add up. There's two missing.
I have a question for you. Would you like to date me next year?
Yeah, exactly.
We can do a show together. Too much haram masala.
Haram masala. There you go. The show is already set. The title is...
And just like that... Just like that, he has already cut off his co-host on the show.
The Egyptian.
Wait, when you're out. When are you leaving town? Because I want to do this as a photo shoot. I'll lend you the bikini from the.
I'm here till mid-May. Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Turmeric to handle. Something like that. Something stupid.
I like haram masala. Haram masala is good.
Haram masala is really good.
Haram masala is great.
No, you see, like, turmeric. It's something like haram masala edition. It's like, what's going to happen over here?
But go back to the infrastructure. Right? I think there's 2 points, right? One is maybe, right? And this is just a point for debate, right? Maybe these comics in the more developed markets, like say the UK and Australia, because they don't have to... worry about the nitty-gritty of production, all this nonsense.
Yeah.
They can focus on writing and being good performers. That's one.
Of course.
So another thing that really impressed about the Australian comedy scene is the infrastructure. And not the physical infrastructure, but the soft infrastructure. For example, like they ease people, new talent, into becoming touring comedians. They have the Raw Finals, which is an open mic, national level finals. And then the finals is held at the Melbourne Comedy Festival in front of a paying audience of almost 1,000 people hosted by a professional. So, and then the winner will get on to do that other stuff. They get pushed into the festival and other shows and then they become pro comics.
They're put on the right track. Yeah.
And it erases the stigma of comedy. So like, for example, like nowadays already Australia has a great, healthy history of performing arts.
Yes.
Right? So that, like, there's no stigma in, oh, I'm going to do arts as a career. There's a lot of stigma in Asia. And then among that arts, it's not uncommon for someone to go, yeah, I want to be a stand-up comic. And no one go, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
In Malaysia, you try saying that to a bunch of non-comedians, they're like, what is wrong with you? So that's the great thing about infrastructure here.
There's also a bit of luck involved because you could be a nobody for a while, but it takes one person to recognize you. Like the director could just come see your show and go, oh, suddenly I want to give them an award or nomination, and you can shoot off like that. So
I was just going to ask Annie, given what Jason just laid out in terms of the infrastructure, and we've all seen it, it's a nice step ladder to the top, but how often do comedians really break out of it? Is it as easy as it sounds?
Or to break out from the from open mic
from
level
the open mic to maybe TV or selling out theaters?
I think so many of my peers, like there's people who I've previously given their first gig or help mentor, and they've completely overtaken me, and I feel like that is a very proud moment as well, because we contributed to the scene to allow that person to to pop off.
Wait, you'd be proud that someone you taught the tricks and they're better than you.
Like,
you're not Asian enough. I'll be like, fuck you, buddy. Like, what the hell?
But it is like, you know, you kind of give back. Like, I started 15 years ago. Like, I'm old, you know, as well. Mm. So, yeah, like, I still do some of that mentoring stuff as well. And I had Nathan Chin was one of the finalists in Raw, and he opened the final. He had the first spot. So, yeah, I think that's part of it to encourage. I think one of the quotes is a good leader wants to help others take over. You know, they're not the ones who think that you're I want to die. This whole thing dies with me.
And I remember Vivek complaining to me once after several years of doing comedy professionally. He said, like, I'm sick of being the top comic in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
You know, he says that, and I genuinely believe him. Like, everyone else is like not upping their game, and I feel like not challenged. And so I think Vivek is the guy who wants his peers to be good, kick him in the ass, then that forces him to be even better. I think there's nothing wrong with someone who I used to mentor overtaking me. I just wish I really wish it happened,
but it won't last long.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, to be fair, for the longest time I thought Vivek was the only comedian in Hong Kong. I don't even mean it as a joke. Genuinely, I didn't know there was anybody else doing stand up in Hong Kong. It probably did my first show there. Yeah. Last question for Annie.
We're running out of time. So one more question.
One quick one. Yeah. Annie, if any of the Asian comedians were to move here on a full-time basis to kind of try and, you know, really build their career here, do you think there's enough opportunity for them to kind of find
How many are we talking here? Everyone in
one.
This room.
Annie's like, how many teas do I have to poison?
Immediately she became like immigration, homeland. How many of you want to come to my country? Go back to where you came. You're full.
Yeah, stay.
Immediately one nation. You're full, okay?
I think, there's definitely room for you to become the best in your race, I think.
Everybody, that was Hong Kong.
Gloves are off. Turnbuckle has been ripped.
Don't give me the mic. Keep going.
Everybody, we have heard it here from Annie Louis. The best in your race is on.
Is genuinely the name for a good show.
Best
in your race.
Wait a second. That is the best showcase show name.
Yeah. Exactly. That's
best of race comedy.
Yes.
You have one
Stop
race.
Calling it Jason Leong and Friends.
The best comedian from each race.
2025 Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
Everyone in this room, the best in your race.
The lineup's already here.
Well, we're gonna have to make you and Danny and Vivek fight for the best in your
Vivek
race.
Is Chinese.
Yeah, technically. Yeah,
nah, I'm sorry.
Jason's problem.
Jason is shaking his head, and it sounds a little racist.
And he's doing the Indian wobble. Then.
Jackie's gonna have to fight Jason, and whatever come is, he will win.
Wow.
That is someone you just shut up.
And this is where the gloves come off, because if you want to hear more of this
fighting, go straight into
Patreon.
We're going to cut this straight into Patreon.
Yeah.
We don't have time to plug everyone's socials, but we will have them all in the show description. Guys, this was like one of the coolest episodes I've ever done.
Thank you so much
for joining Danny, Jason, Jackie, Annie. And
Vivek,
whatever.
Yeah, okay.
There's like few other comics behind.
Glenn as well.
Yeah, Glenn. Oh yeah, Glenn on the music.
And Glenn on the music.
All right, we'll give Glenn a little quick tune. Do you have one riff that you like the most?
There you go. Actually, right? Vivek, can we have his music instead of?
Yeah, I have a question for Glenn. Sorry.
Instead of the outro, no more question.
Yeah,
we'll
go to Patreon. We go to
instead
Patreon.
Instead of the outro, we're going to Patreon.
Glenn, can you give us an outro?
I'll
put the mic. All right, let's give Glenn some music. Play us out, please.